Wherever you are, we are. Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, Bishop T.D. Jakes joins a community of faith leaders to tackle America's racial divide. We'll talk to him about this initiative. President Barack Obama's State of the Union address will happen tonight. We'll break down what you can expect to hear and what should be discussed. Also, gospel artist Ricky Dillard drops by to talk about his new album, Amazing, a work that describes his 10 Stellar Gospel Award nominations. Also, the battle to rethinking Ratchet TV spreads to college campuses. We'll chat with an activist who is about bringing truth to reality. All that and more coming up right now on News One Now. Folks, the most segregated hour of the week doesn't happen when we're at work, doesn't happen when our kids are at school. It actually happens on Sunday morning at 10 a.m. when we go to church. There are many folks in this country who are Christian who proclaim to celebrate the same Jesus, yet for some reason they can't sit next to one another, worship with one another, pray with one another. And so a group of ministers last week got together in Dallas at the Potter's House, the church of Bishop T.D. Jakes, to deal with the issue of racial healing in America by bringing together faith leaders to say they can play a critical role in this particular effort. Bishop Jakes joins us right now via Skype from Dallas to talk about this particular initiative. Bishop, how you doing? Bishop Jakes, can you hear me? All right, we're having some technical issues here with Bishop T.D. Jakes, and so we'll try to get that sorted off. Folks, this particular initiative is critically important because what we are dealing with is the fact that in America, in a so-called post-racial America, you have the nation's first black president, yet we continue to see racial issues come up each and every single day. We've seen the last several months protests dealing with Ferguson in New York and Eric Garner's death, also dealing with, of course, Victor White III, dealing with John Crawford. All of these cases showing us what happens when we have a racial divide. Here's a soundbite from the conference at the Potter's House.
We're talking about not a race problem. We're talking about organizing a society to be fair, to be just.
All right, that was, of course, Ambassador Andrew Young, also an ordained minister who was speaking there as well. All right, still an issue, a technical issue we're having with Bishop Jake Skype. So what we'll do is we're actually going to get him on the phone. So I want to play a couple of more bites from this conference to give you a sense of what else was discussed.
One of the fundamental challenges we face is how do we reconnect with a generation that we have been disconnected with for years.
Now, of course, there were a number of folks who were there. Some 80 faith leaders were invited, African-American, black, Hispanic, Hispanic, white as well. And so it was an idea to bring all of them together to be able to confront this issue of racial healing and having the church take a critical role. There were four critical areas they focused on. Education was one of those. Also, criminal justice was another. And that has been an issue that frankly has been a piece of contention for so many different people. So let's see. Hopefully we have Bishop Jakes right now. Bishop, can you hear me? All right. So we can hear Bishop Jakes. He can't hear us, which obviously makes it difficult to actually have a conversation. And so we will try to get this fixed with you momentarily. Folks, tonight, first of all, let's play one more soundbite from this particular conference, and then hopefully we can have the technical issues.
We do need to demand that the standards be raised across the board. And there is a disparity in respect to the deliverable that we receive in public education.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
All All right, folks, we're trying to get the technical issues sorted out. They had Bishop T.D. Jakes talk about the conference that took place, the racial healing conference that took place last week at the Potter's House. Right now, we're going to talk about the president's State of the Union address. It takes place tonight. He will stand before Congress to give a State of the Union. There's no doubt he is going to focus on the economic recovery. There are some other issues that, of course, he will be dealing with, including his community college initiative, as well as a tax proposal. And so let's break this down right now with our panel. What should the president talk about? Typically, there is, again, this very laundry list of issues, but what should he focus on? I want to introduce my panel right now on the show, folks. To my right, if you will, we have Jason Johnson. Jason, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
Hiram College, certainly glad to have you here. We also have Lauren Victoria Burke. We have Cleo Monago and Sophia Nelson, who is still getting mic'd up, and so we'll deal with that in a second. So I want to go right here. When it comes to State of the Union, the White House, they always give us a sense of what the president will talk about.
Right.
But what should he talk about?
He should talk about criminal justice and police brutality. I suspect he will not do that. I mean, and if he does, he'll do it in sort of a way that's conciliatory to both police and the victims of police brutality. But quite frankly, I don't see how you're going to get through an hour and 45-minute speech without mentioning something with regard to Ferguson or criminal justice reform.
And obviously, when you look at the various initiatives that Attorney General Eric Holder, that he has been focused on, the different kind of announcements.
Right.
I mean, clearly, if you have your Attorney General talking about these issues,
right,
it has been a dominant issue over the past year. That is a part of, I mean, that deals with the state of our union.
And if you have a policing commission that is about to make some recommendations
right
in March, that's another reason. So,
well, I also think it's key. If you look at the guests that the First Lady has this year, she's got two people who were in jail. And I think that's the first time we've had who've been in prison. So so I can't imagine he's not going to make some reference to this one way or another.
Right.
You have the young man out in California. You have the guy who was unfairly imprisoned in Cuba. So the president will say something. Will it be something people are satisfied with? We don't know. But I can't imagine he's not going to address criminal justice reform in some way.
Sophia, what do you want to hear the president talk about tonight?
I would like to see him talk about job creation and innovation. I was very encouraged last week when the White House released that they were giving a cybersecurity grant of $25 million to HBCUs. And I think this is really particularly what our community needs to be focused on now: job creation, innovation, and tech, and how we use it to build wealth and more ownership in our community. Certainly, I believe he should talk about criminal justice and those issues, absolutely. And this new proposal on community colleges, we know that's what he's going to talk about, but I'm not nuts about his proposal. It's a Robin Hood proposal, and it's one we've heard a million times. Democrats want to take from the rich, give to the poor, and Republicans want to trickle down. It's all bad. We need to come up with something different.
Well, the community college proposal?
Yeah, no, I like the proposal. I'm
gotcha.
Saying I don't like how he wants to pay for it.
Well, then again,
the
what if you look at what's happening in Tennessee, though? A Republican governor signed it into law. 57,000 students said they wanted to be involved with it. That's 90% of all those who graduated from high school. And so he's actually presenting what is a Republican
right
plan right now. And so it's going to be a little hard for Republicans to attack a Republican plan.
Trust me, they're going to do
it. They'll do
it. They'll do it. But it's going to sound a little different.
Right.
We can say, hey, but what's happening in Tennessee, Senator Bob Corker, Senator Lamar Alexander,
right.
Cleo, what do you want to hear the president focus on in his address tonight?
Well, at the risk of being redundant, because everybody's kind of said it, I hope he references the issue of criminal justice and racial imbalance regarding the treatment of people by law enforcement. I can't imagine that occurring from that position during the State of the Union speech, but I can fantasize, because that's what you asked me to do, right? Also,
well, I asked you to fantasize.
I hope it comes to pass. I'm not a speechwriter yet, but at this point, I can just dream about him actually using that position to talk about the importance of equity around criminal justice and people being treated fairly, and people unlearning the tendencies in law enforcement to keep killing black people. That would be nice. Wouldn't that be nice?
But when we talk about that, here's one of the things. When the president first came into office, he signed the law that lowered the disparity between crack cocaine and
right
powder cocaine.
Right, right, right.
From 100 to 1 to 18 to 1.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He should stand before Congress and say, lower it from 18 to 1 to
right
1 to 1.
Right.
And
exactly
the second thing is,
yeah,
he has to challenge Congress on this issue of sentencing reform and say we have too many nonviolent offenders
right
who are in jail. And keep in mind, and if I'm the president, Grover Norquist, big time tax person,
yep.
something he supports.
Right.
Newt Gingrich, in fact, Republican governors mm-hmm. have been very aggressive on this as well. And so here's an opportunity to say Speaker Boehner,
right.
say, of course, Senate Leader right. McConnell, Republicans are out here on this issue. You also need to stand and change the law now.
Exactly. And the other key thing, and I think this is so important also, given how lousy the ratings have been. I mean, they've been going down every year. People don't want to watch it because he needs to talk about things he knows he can get done. And I think one of the reasons people have become so disappointed and disenchanted with the State of the Union is, you know, it's this laundry list. It's what dad wants for Christmas, and we know he's just going to get socks. I mean, like, the president needs to say, look, this is the stuff that
not
I
even,
want done.
Not even fun socks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but not even fashionable ones.
Every
you know.
Year.
But I mean, every year it's like, this is what I'm going to do, and right. then nothing gets done.
He,
so he
never,
needs to focus on two or three issues.
He's say, never listed things
done.
That he could get done. Last year it was minimum wage. It was equal pay. There was job training. Now,
well,
he got a little bit of that done.
But
here's the deal, though. He couldn't get minimum wage through Congress,
right.
but it got through states.
Exactly.
Well, the whole
theme, had that impact.
The whole theme of last year was, I'm going to do this without Congress, which to some extent he did uh-huh. for immigration.
Right.
For immigration.
But still, you know, when you talk about these things and you know they're not going to happen because the Republicans obviously are going to stop him, it is sort of an odd, almost like a PR trick of, these are the things, particularly with the free community college issue. I mean, we know that's not going to happen. We know the tax reform package is not going to happen.
Right.
And we also know this is the same president who agreed to the Bush tax cut extension two times in a row. So if you agree to the Bush tax cut extension two times in a row, why are you back now trying to raise taxes? I don't understand that. So that's a PR
Sophia.
Move.
But Roland, here's the thing. This president, let's give him a little bit of credit. He's not Bill Clinton, who I think was the best politician I've ever seen, truly. But I think this president understands that he's got to give a little, to get a little, and I really think he's going to get something that he wants out of this. I think that they start over here. I also think Boehner and the Republicans have to be very careful going into 2016 if they are seen as doing nothing and just blockers. So I think they both kind of need each other in an interesting way to get something done.
He should hammer them on the economy.
Yeah, but
he's doing well on the economy and gas prices. He should hammer them on
But here's the deal, though. The reason I'm talking about the whole idea of sentencing reform, because you have leading Republicans
who,
and again, right. their motive has
and
been
right. voting rights.
But again,
sure.
their motive
right.
has been fiscal.
Yes.
Right. And so my
right.
deal
right.
is,
right.
you, tie,
yeah.
you
right.
but see, you tie the issue of nonviolent offenders
right.
to us spending so much money, tie it also to the economy, the fact
right.
that when
right.
they get out,
right.
they can't get a job. And so all of this all comes together.
He should mention the Rand Paul, Cory Booker bill, the Redeem Act. He should endorse
right.
that publicly. That's exactly what you just said with regard to the expungement of
yeah.
people's records for nonviolent felonies. That's an easy thing to do.
Also, I think one thing that he should do, and I know that Congressman Clyburn has been trying to get him and the administration to publicly back this
right.
4 or 5 years, and that is the 10-20-30 rule.
Right.
Right.
Congressman Clyburn's rule, he wants to say 10% of government resources, when they pass a bill, goes to those counties where 20% or more of the people have been living below the poverty line for 30 years.
That's right.
Three-quarters of those counties are Republican counties.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, exactly.
I mean, look, what he's actually going to propose, and again, all of these things we're saying are great. The issue is going to be, again, what does the president actually think he can get done? Because if he wants to do this all through executive order, it would be fantastic. I just don't necessarily think that President Obama is inclined to do that. That's why I think a smaller focus of what's actually going to get done is better.
If it's a speech about what you can get done, he wouldn't be saying anything. The Republicans, of course, are against him on everything. So it's the idea that
there are things he can do. There are things he can do. Like I said, we saw it with immigration reform. We saw it with some environmental. We saw it with waterways.
He did it on his own by executive order. He had to do it on his own.
But here's the deal, Cleo, mm-hmm. and this is what really jumps out for me, and that is, when you talk about an issue such as, again, sentencing reform, or when it comes to tying it to the economy, you are operating in a situation where you say, Republican, please tell me why it's a bad idea. And you look to the American people and say, this is costing us billions of dollars that we simply can be putting into the economy. You challenge them that way.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, now they're in a situation going,
Well, there you go again, being rational.
Yeah.
I've got an experience with that before. That's a rational and very intelligent position. But, you know, Republicans sometimes are not rational. They have an agenda they don't always articulate. But what comes out is that we don't get what we want in terms of the people generally. And people who are typically under the radar regarding support by the government in this country.
Sophia, the thing that when I had Reince Priebus on this show, when I had then interim NAACP CEO Lorraine Miller on this show, this is what I said, very simple. I said, if you're Republicans and you have Republican governors who are out there on this issue of criminal justice reform,
right,
you should say, NAACP, stand, we will stand with you and stand with us.
They're not that bright, Roland.
Hold on, you're missing something. The question is, will the NAACP do it?
Well,
see, there's a lot of black folks who don't necessarily want to stand Republicans.
Right.
And what I'm saying is, we also have to say, all right, fine, we'll stand with you on this one. Will you stand with us?
But I think that is a great point. And when I say they're not bright enough, I'm saying the Republicans are ranked previous, who I'm sure you said this to on the show, doesn't have enough good sense to go back and actually do something like that, because it would put the NAACP in a very interesting position to have to do or don't, which, as you said, would raise the specter and the ire of a lot of black folks. Like, well, what's up with that? Why wouldn't they do that?
Yeah, so, but the point I'm making is, what's important to us? Is it the issue or is it the optics? My whole deal is, I don't care right. if I'm standing with Republicans on this issue.
Either.
If you got brothers and sisters who are not going to jail for these nonviolent offenses, and that's also saving taxpayer money, which we can put in education, which we can put when it comes to primary, secondary, and college as well, I say you actually go for it.
Right.
But again, I think if you're the president, you be that bold and actually say it. Hold tight 1 second. We're going to pick up this conversation more again, dealing with what should the president say in tonight's State of the Union address. What do you want to hear in tonight's State of the Union address? We'll break it down for you. 20 after the hour. This is News 1 Now, TV 1.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News 1 Now.
All right, folks, New Year's will be watching tonight the State of the Union address, not just on broadcast and cable television, but also on their pads and phones as well. And so we'll certainly see what the president will address. The question is, what do you want him to address? Send me a tweet at News 1 or at Roland S. Martin, and I just might read here on the air. You can also go to our Facebook page as well. Let's go back to our panel, Sophia Nelson, Cleo Monago, Lauren Victoria Burke, and also Jason Johnson. And so, what else jumps out? What else jumps out that the president should
talk about terror, given what happened in France? Certainly, I imagine he's going to probably open with it. And ISIS has a new video out today that's very disturbing with the two Japanese gentlemen that they're threatening to behead if they don't get $200 million from Japan. So I think he has to talk about the terror threat. I think given what happened in France last week and the threats that they've had in Europe, America has to be very concerned about, are we next and what happens?
Well, but you know what? I think for somebody sitting at home. He's going
to
mention it.
Yeah.
But I think this is not a hardcore economic State of the Union address.
Yeah. No, he needs to bring up rising tuition costs and domestic
candid,
issues.
That's not something that's a real concern. Now, if the president wants to speak about it in a more philosophical sense, I'm serious. In a more philosophical sense, if he wants to say, connect that to what happened with the interview and say, look, As an effect of being the president of the United States, we have to make sure that people have the right to express themselves, whether that's in a movie that's offensive or whether that's in cartoons that are racist. If he wants to make a general argument, that's fine. But I agree with Roland. He should be talking about our economy. He should be talking about human rights issues. He should be talking about prison reform. Look, he could say Charlie Hebdo 12 times. I'd appreciate if he says something about Boko Haram. If the president's really going to be talking about international issues, I'd like him to focus on things that are slightly more substantive.
I don't think he should talk about international at all, because when we start talking about these other countries and human rights and we skip over things like Ferguson, that's a big mistake. It's very glaring.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get domestic again, talk about tuition. Talk about rising tuition. Obviously, he's going to bring up his two-year free community college issue. Then you segue into tuition costs. But surely he is going to mention terrorism, but I keep that thing domestic.
Likely to mention terrorism than criminal justice.
I do.
Really? Yeah, you're probably right.
His function under the Constitution is as commander in chief, and that is like his main duty, to be honest with you. Domestic, I don't read any of that in the Constitution. And so his job is really to protect this nation. And I think terror is going to be mentioned prominently. I bet everybody dinner here, and I'm paying that's mentioned very prominently.
Oh, I'll bet he mentions that more than Ferguson.
You can, I don't think Ferguson gets mentioned at all.
Yeah.
I think he talks more broadly about, you know, the issues that we talked about, but I don't think he's going there.
Well, I think in a way, and
this is
the next to last, you know, it's the next to last State of the Union, right?
Right.
I think he's also going to be teeing some things up for 2016, which means I do think he's going to be talking about some of those issues. He's got to, this is his last chance to speak to the coalition that he built over the last 6 years to try and help out Hillary or Biden or O'Malley or something else like that. So I can't imagine he's going to ignore hundreds of thousands of people who've been protesting across the
country. Exactly
he's
right.
He's going to say
this
something.
This is the White House that told us for 4 years that they couldn't bring up any race issues because they were going to do it in the second term. Well, it's the second term now, and you're second to the last State of the Union. You can say whatever you want. So if you can't talk about race now, when can you talk about it? There's always some reason not to talk about it. At some point, it should be talked about. And you know, I'm tired of the excuses or the reasoning or, you know, well, he can't really talk about that. He can do whatever he wants. You're the President of the United States. You can do whatever you want.
He doesn't want to.
Well,
right.
That's deep, that he can do anything he wants, but he won't talk about race.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I keep saying that there's a resistance from the president to be direct about race because of concern around association. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. But I can't imagine him using this position to talk about race issues.
And Sophia's going to be right. It's going to be more terrorism.
Well,
no mention of Ferguson.
To be perfectly candid, look, the president talked about race quite a bit, just not in ways that most people find to be particularly helpful or substantive.
Well,
that's the issue.
Well, that's not helpful.
All the time. He's just talking
y'all
about
that's
hard
not helpful.
The president
a passive aggressive,
truth,
in unclear, abstract approach to racism, might as well not even talk about
it. It's actually not that abstract. If you look at his speech at the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, there was nothing abstract about that.
Yeah,
unfortunately, that was not an abstraction.
Yeah, he's
and that
clear.
Was, I thought, one of the lowest points for him with regard to referring to race.
Well, I'm talking about helpful referrals to
I mean,
race.
Community
but I
college,
think the
what
way,
the president would say is community
the way
college
Roland,
is very helpful to people of color,
but
especially
the,
working
right.
class and poor.
It is, but
that's
the way
true.
Roland couched it as we open with the sentencing and the criminal justice, I do believe that he does need to talk about that. And I think the community college, it's innovation, it's job creation, it's education. That is the way to lift our communities up, and hopefully he can talk about race, not in ways we all want him to, because we want him to just go there. But he's not going to do that.
Yeah.
He's not going to.
He did drop $25 million for HBCUs the other day. He should plug Norfolk State. Norfolk State is having some accreditation problems.
Yep.
They're leading that,
yep.
So he should plug Norfolk State. That would be nice.
Well,
Cleo, go ahead.
I was going to say, this fantasizing is always frustrating. I like constructive, practical application. And I'm getting frustrated with the fantasy stuff about him saying, I gave an HBCU several $1 million and I want to get a
I'm
shot
not saying
out.
He's got to come out in a dashiki and a big Afro wig.
Well,
I'm just saying that he's got to say
Afro
a few
wig.
Things.
But I feel the same way. I mean, you know, he can play Nat X and Luther the anger management person all he wants. But at the end of the day, I agree with you. Substantive and practical things matter. As an academic, when I look at this college tuition plan and the idea of free community college. Again, I think that's a lifting all boats situation. People of color will be helped, poor people will be helped, et cetera, et cetera. But you got to tell me how to pay for it. And that's one of the issues that I've had.
I mean, at the risk of sounding selfish, black self-concept drives everything in terms of ultimately the quality of our lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when things are abstract, even when people get money in an abstract situation,
also,
in terms of self-concept, there's no benefit if you're not unless you're direct about the importance of black lives in this country.
Also, the last spending bill he did dropped $1.6 billion for Egypt, and we're sitting around talking about how we can't pay for 2 years of community. I mean, I know it's astronomically expensive, but we drop money on other countries like crazy, and then we can't find money for our own people right here.
There's
something wrong with that.
I think you're raising a good point, though.
It's
as we are Selma 50, and we are, you know, looking back at those who sacrificed so that all of us could do what we do and have what we have. I think you're talking about the will here, and it is interesting. The president of the United States finds himself in an interesting conundrum that he has from day one, which is every time he's talked about race, Skip Gates, anything else, he gets whacked for it.
Well,
and I think
it's always a whack
right,
approach.
Well, you're right. Well, okay. But I'm just saying that ultimately, I think they're still not comfortable at this White House on how
not.
To talk about it yet. They don't know how to go there without alienating the mainstream of America and the broader white America
what.
That just doesn't see black lives
if,
the way all of
but
us.
But like somebody said, he's in his last legs.
I get that,
presidency.
But you know,
I'm telling you,
this is a fantasy
now.
Again.
Legacy
right. It's
legacy.
A fantasy,
there's
but
there's things
if,
he can
if,
do now without worrying about losing the vote.
If a Southern president can get up there and say, "We shall overcome," in 1964, with what
but
was going
was
on in the background,
man, it's different.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
He was a white man. It's different. It was still tough to say for a Southern president. It caused a complete reorganization of the Democratic Party, and we know it. But he still did it.
Right.
He still did it. So don't, just because he's white doesn't mean, okay, he's not brave. He still did it.
Right, but that also has to do, that has to do with the general concept of political will. This is not what President Obama does. I guess part of this for me is I don't know why people keep trying to project onto him a man that he has never been. So you have to be happy with who he actually is.
Who he actually is.
I mean, if we're going to stay in Teddy Riley's fantasy, we can fantasize about what kind of man Obama's going to be, but it's clear that President Obama is a minimalist. He's a pragmatist in his own mind, so he's not going to do some radical, amazing thing that's going to change
people's
lives.
Well, this is not radical. To mention Ferguson is not radical.
Well, speaking of radical, I'm paying some bills for you. So we'll come back. I'm going to chat with Deborah Owens about the economic issue the president should be dealing with. Of course, she is America's wealth coach. We'll deal with that when we come back. News 1 Now on TV1.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, I've wealthy you segment. We always talk about money, so why not talk about the issue of money when it comes to also the State of the Union address? Joining us right now, America's Wealth Coach Deborah Owens. And of course, we'll still have Cleo Monago, we have Lauren Victoria Burke, and we have Jason Johnson. Income inequality, Deborah, I think that the president focused on it last year when he. And then, of course, which I still don't understand, why in the hell you go to Costco in Maryland the day after the State of the Union address to highlight income inequality. And I get the fact that Costco raised the wages for the employees, but I still go back to, okay, that's not really where I'm going to go.
Exactly. But just me. You know, what I would say is that President Obama made a number of economic proposals on Friday that I think is aimed at targeting this income inequality specifically. And if you look at all of those economic proposals, what you'll see is it's key that he's targeting that top 1%. So I know there are a lot of people, pundits, economic pundits, talking about, oh, it's the Robin Hood. No, it's not the Robin Hood economic proposal, because this is going to the heart of that top 1% that is basically has 99% of the wealth. So that's what I want to talk about.
We talked about the Free Community College Initiative already.
Yes.
And so one of the things that he laid out, which let's talk about this here. What is this married couples tax credit?
Well, the married couples tax credit. Now, I did like a scorecard. One to five. And that's my whole point. It's like, well, here's the deal, though. If you're married and you're filing, when you file your taxes, you end up paying more than if you filed individually. It's only a $500 tax credit. On a scale of 1 to 5, I give that a 3, because that's not going to have a significant impact. What I would say, however, is that at the top of my list is this capital gains tax increase.
Okay, for somebody sitting at home, okay, who don't have a stock in their name.
And that's why it's
important. What's the capital gains tax increase?
That's why it's important, because what people do have, many of middle-income Americans have, is their house, you know. And so if you sell that
as
a profit, and that would be a capital gain. So, and for most people who are saving in their tax, in their IRA or their 401k, that sort of thing, they're not going to see the benefit of a capital gains tax increase. But what you are going to see is the fact that a lot of money to pay for all of these other things that he wants to do,
right,
like free college, that will increase a lot. That will give a lot of revenues to the budget. And as you can see, when during the campaign, when you talked about why did Romney only pay 17%, that's because most of his incomes came from capital gains tax. So it may not appear that it's going to impact the middle class, but in reality, in order for him to do all of these other things, like free college, like the one of the things I really like is this expansion of the child care tax credit, and what it will allow him to do is have the income available or the revenues available to pay for some of these things for the middle class.
Now, I know he wants to change the trust fund tax loophole. I mean, that's going to affect Jason. It don't affect me at all.
Again, okay, I argue that. I give that a 5 stars, because you talk about robbing from the poor and the rich getting a benefit. This is where they get it.
But here's the deal. The reality is this here. Our tax code is written by rich folk.
Right.
It's meant to assist rich folks right. to keep more of their money. And that's why, and they also have the lobbyists. They're the ones who are going to be fighting viciously to make sure these things don't happen. And so that's part of the issue there.
But what I would argue, Roland,
and this the but, and these issues go right to income inequality.
This goes right to income inequality. But what I would argue is this is exactly where we have to go, because what we have to do is look at the rich continuing to get richer, and they have the ability to do that because they're exploiting the tax code.
Right.
I mean, what I would suggest is that we go to some kind of tax program that's not only a lot fairer, but is a lot less complicated what? Because you have all of these, a whole cottage industry around estate planning. You know, you've got to pay somebody $1,000 to do your taxes.
Right.
So he's going to the heart of that top 1%. In fact, that top of the 10% of that 1%, that's where all these proposals are going, and they're going to create revenue so you can do some of the things for the middle class.
I do believe, though, that one of the things this president has to deal with when it comes to the issue of the economy, he's also got to deal with housing.
Right.
Because the reality is, I mean, you can talk about all the rest of this stuff. You
right.
can talk about the stock market, how it's exploding, but the reality is most Americans, their wealth comes from their home. And if there's one criticism that I've been consistent with from day one of this administration, they have been woeful
yes.
when it comes to housing plans that are actually helping more people. They've fallen short of their goals repeatedly.
If you can save all this additional money with these plans, unless it goes back into the hands of people to either recover the homes that they've lost, we all know Black America lost about 30% of all of our wealth.
No,
53% of all of our wealth
yes.
through this Great Recession and just losing houses essentially
That's right.
alone.
That's right.
So if this money doesn't go back into people's pockets, repurchase your own program, repurchase your old home, keep the home that you're in, you're exactly right. Nothing ends up happening because the vast majority of people, I'll be honest with you, everything that you said in that proposal is fantastic. It is over the heads of about 60% of the population. People are not paying attention. It's like, can I keep my house? Can I keep my car? And anything that doesn't directly hit those issues, yeah. that's missing the vast majority of the
And I agree. And thank you for bringing that up, because I think in all of the proposals, this is what has not been addressed in terms of this housing crisis. What you and I both know, Roland, the people that are writing us from this Wealthy You program, is that's the major missing point.
Right.
You have interest rates lower than they've ever been, and yet people are not able to refinance at these lower rates because they're underwater. And so if you are underwater, or if you don't have a Fannie Mae loan, then you're unable to refinance. That's the missing link. I think what needs to happen is there needs to be a program that goes way beyond on making home affordable programs
right.
and allows people, no matter what state they are from an economic standpoint in terms of equity, that they can refinance at these lower rates. And what that will do is free up discretionary income
right.
and help this economy grow. So I totally agree with that. That is the missing point in all of this.
All right, certainly appreciate it, Deborah. Thanks a lot. Cleo Monago, Law and Victoria Burt, Jason Johnson, thank you so very much. Up next, folks, Ricky Dillon, 10 Stellar Awards. That's right, he's got 10 Stellar Award nominations. We'll chat with him when we come back right here, folks. And also, Black Women are Paying the Price for Ratchet TV. We'll break down the harmful relationship between Black women and reality TV with Salah Abrams, of course, the founder of Truth and Reality. 15 before top of the hour, News One Now on TV.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Birthday shout out time, folks. DJ Questlove, drummer for The Roots. You also see him on Jimmy Kimmel. He turns 44 years old. Actress Stacey Dash turns 48. Academy Award nominee Margaret Avery, known as Shook in The Color Purple, turns 71 years young. On this day in history, in 1870, Hiram Revels was chosen senator for the state of Mississippi. Mississippi becomes the first Black senator in the United States. In 1954, the National Negro Network is founded, becoming the first Black-owned radio network in the country with 40 affiliate stations. All right, folks. Ricky Dillon is a shiny suit wearing, long robe having, foot stomping choir leader. And 2014 was his year with a record 10 Stellar nominations plus a Grammy nomination for Best Gospel Album. His new album is titled Amazing. And Ricky Dillard, welcome right here to the News One Now Said. How you doing, Doc?
Thank you, sir. It's good to be here with you today.
So 10 Stellar nominations. Not bad. That's
it. What you talking? Overwhelming.
Are there any other categories you were not nominated in?
That's what I said. I started only three categories, and now we've moved to 10. So that's amazing. So we're thankful to be here.
Let's talk about this. You are in an age where gospel artists are more individual as opposed to traditionally where there were choirs. You sort of still retain that sort of that traditional feel and sound, if you will, as well as look.
Yes. Well, you know, you have to make your call in an election, sure. And the choir is certainly what I have been called to. I am definitely sure at where I'm supposed to be, and I'm going to stay in my lane, and that is my passion, the choir. Even though you go to many churches and they have downsized, they only have praise teams mm-hmm. or a singer, but the choir is very biblical, as David led the choir and Moses started a choir. It was just overwhelming that I have been called to take on the torch and to continue the legacy of the choir in the church and give the choir the spirit of excellence that they will come out and be motivated to do what it is to do in a worship experience.
What makes the choir aspect unique?
What makes it unique is first of all, the unity of the voices and what you appear to see, and to be able to come together in unity to ignite the atmosphere for the presence of God to be present in a room. And we sing as unto the glory of God, that his power would fall and the needs of the people are met under the unction of the Holy Ghost.
But also, I think that when you talk about the choir as well, it's also part of the ability to have other people in the church to serve.
Absolutely.
I mean, we got a praise team, you got five or six people.
Absolutely.
You know, and so
Absolutely.
Even if there's somebody who they can sing okay.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, they're not great. They can still sort of be hidden, if you will, in the church choir.
That's the whosoever will let him come. You know, even if you're not as skillful, many churches allow, you know, you to come forward and be sharpened and to be empowered to do what you do and to also be able to stand before the congregation and show your gift and skill.
Now, one of the things interesting, I would say what's also interesting about the choir is the theatrics of the choir director. I remember seeing years ago, my brother went to Jones High School, and V. Michael McKay.
Yes.
And he had the Redeemed family.
Absolutely.
I couldn't tell whether V. Michael McKay was the choir director or whether he was operating like James Brown. And so the choir director, I mean, really does sort of control and direct that whole thing. And so theatrics kind of goes with it.
Absolutely.
The arms and all this sort of stuff as well.
It's actually the joy of the Lord. As David danced before the Lord with all his might, this is what takes over me. When I think of the goodness of God and how he has brought me and kept me and I have survived the darts of the enemy, the joy of the Lord overtakes me. I'm going into a praise, I'm going into a dance, and I am liberated to give God all that I have because of what he has done and who he is.
So surely there's a choir director, you said, look, I noticed the choir, but you really can't
hold a note. I'm finna do my thing.
You can't hold a note.
Yeah, listen, you have to be able to be the leader. If you are not the leader, you will be overrun and people will do whatever they want to do. There must be a leader to get you where you want to go.
Well, again, 10 Stellar nominations, also Grammy nomination, the CD, amazing. All right, so I always test folk, because, you know, some people can sing, some can sing. What skills you got? You got about 20 seconds. Let's
You're
see what you got.
Amazing. You're amazing. You cause the sun, the stars and moon to shine. I'm so glad you're mine. I'm so glad you're mine.
You should be directing the staff right here. Directing the, that's right, all the crew in here.
Yeah, we got some background vocals over there.
I don't want to hear none of them sing. Ricky, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, baby.
Thank you, Roland. I appreciate everything.
Folks, up next, Shalai Abrams, Truth in Reality. She's dealing with Ratchet TV. I'm Roland Martin. This is News 1 Now on TV.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now. With Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Folks, reality television shows like Sorority Girls are not only annoying, but they paint negative pictures of black women that ultimately affect how they are treated. Of course, VH1, they burned off those episodes last week. But you still have some other shows out there. You got this crazy show that's coming out where you got a cussing daughter calling her aunt the B word, stuff along those lines that's coming on TLC. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And unfortunately, what you're seeing are black women who are in that particular role. Shalai Abrams, she's the founder of Truth in Reality. She's going to be speaking on this issue at Howard University tonight. Shalai, welcome back to the show. We are seeing, I said this last night on Twitter, we're seeing more of these shows because the reality is black women watch TV more than anybody else.
Absolutely.
And so when you look at these networks, they're targeting black women because they say these black women can put our shows on the map when it comes to their viewership.
Absolutely, we do it. I mean, we have literally created Shondaland through Twitter and all these shows. When you see the hashtags every week trending, I mean, we have jumped onto this genre, not even thinking about, well, what are we exactly jumping onto?
And in fact, it's very interesting because there are folks who were supporting the boycott of Sorority Sisters who were avid watchers of Real Housewives of Atlanta. And I'm going,
yeah,
you were a contributor to this because the success of one show creates the next show.
Yeah, and I received some pushback because I did a video called The Real Problem with Sorority Sisters, Othering and Selective Activism. And one of the points that I made is that it is amazing that the boycott happened. It shows what we can do as a people when we are unified and take a stand. But again, we need to move beyond moving forward and say, okay, take this collective power and use it to shut down any type of media that denigrates and exploits women of color, not just because of the way we're represented, but because of the larger issues that how it impacts us from a gender equality and gender-based violence issue.
You're traveling to college campuses. You're going to be at Howard University today.
Yes, sir.
What are you saying to those college students?
Well, what I'm going to be talking about is the impact, the intersectionality of our media representation, historical racial stereotypes, misogyny, and how that ties into the normalization of relational aggression among women, between women and men, and how it ultimately violent images of women, particularly on reality television, decreases empathy. This is studies show this, mm-hmm. decreases empathy for women and increases male aggression towards women.
Your hashtag is defining her story.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
At Truth and Reality _.
Okay, all right, now that's actually the reality _, but I gotta ask you this in about 20 seconds. What do you want people to do? Sorority Sisters likely going away. Mm-hmm. What do you want folks to do next?
The next step is for people to really educate themselves. In order to be able to create a change, we've got to wake a sleeping people. There are too many people out there that still believe that these shows are okay. So that's what our organization is doing. Is a rally cry going around to college campuses, using digital advocacy as a way to educate, inspire, and empower those to learn more and make an informed choice on their media choices.
If folks want you to come to a college campus or even speak to that particular group, how do they reach you?
They can go to our website, truthinreality.org, and tonight, Howard University at 5 p.m. at the College of Medicine. I hope that they'll come out.
All right, Shalai, certainly appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.